long black limousine came and picked us up and carried us back to the house. It was a somber ride, us sitting in long seats facing one another.
If this thing ain't dead, it's gotta get dead. For Jack.
For Jack.
Then everyone said it.
For Jack.
Except the colonel. He leaned back in his seat, pushing his ample belly out.
Never thought I'd say it, but we might be in over our head.
So we just let it go? Let it seep into the ground? Hide under a turd, whatever it does, and we forget it?
Nothing like that. But we may need reinforcements. It's never happened before, as this is the cream of the crop, but now, I don't know.
If we're the cream of the crop, and it handed us our ass, killed Jack, fucked my arm up, that means we give up? What are you saying?
Once again, reinforcements.
This is about us, and it's about that thing and all those other things, and it's about Jack. We call in more people, we just got more people. Bunch of greenhorns. We've been doing this a while, and we're the ones cut out to do it.
Not so far.
I've never heard you go negative.
I've never felt negative before. I'm wondering if it can be stopped, with reinforcements or without. This is different, the connection with the other dimension. This shape-shifting ability is far superior to some of those we've dealt with, you know. People turning into bats, rats, insects, and shadows. This, well, it's different. There's the Big Mama, and there's all those minions. They can't even make up their mind what they are.
Different. But I'm not giving up. You want to close down shop, you do that. But me? I'll stay after this son of a bitch until the last dog dies and the fleas on it.
I'm with Elvis.
Me too.
Agreed.
I'm not quitting.
All right. But the first thing I think we should do is call for reinforcements, for one thing and one thing only. Let's have them run bulldozers over that lot, set it on fire, raise it, blow it up, tell the city it was a gas line explosion, something like that. Let's fuck that place over until there's nothing left but the mineral rights. That way, we see if it's still there, and if not, we rid it of that place to hide. Figure our next step from there.
You think it went home, so to speak?
It and its minions like it here. What it goes back for, I have no idea. There's nothing there except what you all saw under the influence of Rococo Blue.
So they may still be close by.
Possible, Johnny. Shape-shifting gives them lots of options, and they have to eat.
He looked at Elvis, then at Jenny.
And they want these two especially. All of us, for that matter, because of who we are.
Charisma again.
Well, we came to the house and the limo let us out. The sun was up high and it was sort of hot and growing hotter by the time we came up to the door. The wasp nest was active. And wasps buzzed around it and dive-bombed us. One of them hit Jenny solid.
Ah! Ow! God damn it! I've been stung. Oh, I hate those things.
I'll call an exterminator.
The colonel moved toward the kitchen, as we all did. Except for Jenny. She went upstairs. We sat at the dining room as if it had been planned. It was solemn in that dining room, I tell you that. You could have heard a roach pass a turd. It wasn't long before Jenny came back down the stairs, headed for the front door. She had a can of hairspray in one hand, something smaller in the other. We all looked at one another, and again, as if planned, we all rose and followed her outside.
I hate these things.
You can figure the state we were in, all of us out in the yard watching Jenny say bad things about wasps. It was a spectator sport for a moment there. Wasps and cusses, I guess you could say. Jenny lit a piece of paper she unfolded from her blue jeans pocket with a cigarette lighter. That was what was in the other hand. And then she held it up to the buzzing wasps, pointed the hairspray at the can, and squeezed the button. The spray hit the blaze and made a small flamethrower effect, caught the nest on fire, as well as some flying wasps. The flames kicked up and the nest turned black. The eave above the door caught fire as well, burned for a moment, and went out. The blackened nest broke loose and fell to the ground. A couple of wasps, their wings burned off, crawled smoking out of the nest, and then they quit crawling. They were blackened wisps.
I feel sorry for them. They was just doing wasp things.
Unfortunately for them, that means stinging me. So I was just doing Jenny things.
Fair enough.
That's when I noticed Elvis. His mouth was hanging open, and he was looking at that blackened nest as if some great revelation of God was about to be revealed.
Let's get that coffee. I don't feel like much else right now.
That was the cue, and everyone went inside, except Elvis. A little later, when the coffee was ready, I poured cups for everyone, and then, holding the unplugged pot in my hand, I glanced out the window. Elvis had found a lawn chair and was sitting in it, staring down at that nest. I guess he was grieving like the rest of us. Not about the wasps, but Jack. Maybe both. He was hard to figure sometimes. I fixed his coffee like he liked it. Milk and sugar and a dollop of coffee. And took it out to him. I handed it to him and he took it.
Thanks.
He never looked up. He kept staring at that nest.
You okay?
I'm fine, Johnny.
Get tired of staring at the nest. Come in and have some breakfast. Colonel's cooking.
Sure.
There was nothing else to say, so I went inside and had my breakfast and drank my coffee. We all told stories about Jack, and none of us mentioned what had happened to him. After a while, Jenny scooped some scrambled eggs and a few strips of bacon onto a slice of bread, put it on a plate, and took it out to Elvis. I watched him take the plate, place it in his lap, lift the food and eat it. It didn't seem as if he actually knew he was eating. He wouldn't take his eyes off that wasp's nest. Jenny put her arm around him, and finally she sat down in the yard by his chair, and they both looked at the nest. I left them to it. Well, now, I reckon it must have been about noon or so when I remembered they were out in the yard. I'd gone up to my room and showered and changed clothes, and to keep from thinking about Jack, I read a little, but it was like my mind couldn't keep the words. I had no idea what I read. Back downstairs, I saw the doctor had arrived. He was one of ours. I had seen him before. He traveled about to attend to people, if he was close enough. He was out of Shreveport. He had a pretty black nurse with him. They were working on John Henry's arm. They set it. They didn't put it in a cast. Instead, they wrapped it and slipped on a brace, then hung it in a nylon sling so that it lay across his chest. John Henry was chatting the nurse up, trying to make some time, but she wasn't having any of it. She smiled, but behind the smile was a no. I went over and tried my luck. John Henry glared at me all the time I was working it, but it didn't matter. We both struck out. I looked out the window, and still sitting there were Jenny on the ground and Elvis in that chair. It was as if my looking out the window was the signal, because they both stood up and came into the house.
People, me and Jenny, we think we know how to kill it.
Or get killed trying.
Let's just do the first part.
What we gotta do is rethink things.
We have been looking at this all wrong.
Have we? What can we do that's different? Hold our mouths at a different angle?
Other day, when we made our little Rococo Blue trip, you said something interesting.
I always do.
No, this was truly interesting.
That's right. You said you couldn't figure why the things kept going back. What were they doing easing out of sight in that strange bleak land? Remember saying that?
No.
Okay, maybe I dreamed you said that, or I read between the lines. But would you say that is indeed a curiosity, and that you hinted at that?
Words to that effect.
And when Jenny set fire to that nest, I understood the solution. When we were in its world, that big, dark thing that pulsed, and we didn't know what it was. And I'm assuming we all saw the same thing, even if we didn't see one another. Am I right? Big, dark, hanging on a cliff wall, red light oozing out of it like radioactive strawberry jam. Everyone see that?
Sure did.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you said, Colonel, that it was part of the environment. It was like a volcano or an earthquake. It was some natural thing that went on all the time. And it was as natural to that world as those things are to ours.
True. Or maybe I said that. Maybe I didn't.
Did or didn't, that's how I remember it. Maybe I brought some of your thoughts that went out there back with me. Doesn't matter. But that big dark thing with the strawberry jelly, I know what it is. Wasp's Nest got me thinking on it. That and the fact that we know the head cosmic soul sucker has other suckers under her. Big Mama, in my view, may be the Big Mama under a bigger mama, or Big Daddy, whatever you want to call it. Fact is, I'm as certain of it as I can be. That giant, black, pulsing thing is not merely a part of the environment. It's a nest. A giant nest.
That's ridiculous.
Think about it. Their world has been decimated, or close enough to it. Real life there is gone, or will soon be. But with the rips in time and space due to Rococo Blue and what have you, they have to come here. The food they crave, the power from charisma, even the little powers from the dullest mind in the universe are their meat. They want anything they can eat, but the more powerful a personality, the more they want it because it gives them jacked up mojo. But the power is not for them alone, the ones that come here. They are merely servants, even Big Mama. What they suck in, they spit out for the feeding of the hive. Big Mama has a boss, and it's in that hive. It's like bees. You know how the queen is taken care of, fed, how it makes honey, how she lives off royal jelly. Whatever is in that hive, that's the queen or king, and they are all in service to it. And that oozing red stuff we saw leaking out of the hive, that's their honey.
That's as big a jump in thinking as I've ever heard.
Perhaps not. I sensed it was a living thing, but I thought living in the manner of grass as a living thing. It doesn't put off the same sort of waves we do as even its minions do, including Big Mama. If Elvis is right, this thing is alive, but not in the same sense as its helpers or as we are. It is alive in the way nature is alive. It doesn't care, doesn't give a damn, it just has to eat. And every time it gets enough of what those things bring back to it, because that idea is making sense to me now, it grows.
So, to cut this down to where I can understand it, on the other side of this dimension, just to the left of reason, off the highway of common sense, and into a rest spot for the weird, there's a big nest, and it's getting all this goop brought to it by worker bees, and that keeps it alive?
That sounded pretty smart for you.
Fuck you.
That's right, John Henry. And this thing's workers. They survive on some of what they capture. A person's essence, however you define it. But most of it goes to that thing. And it's that thing that keeps them alive. Its servants don't reason about why they do what they do. They just do it.
Simple solution. We eliminate their purpose. The source of all this is a far easier mark than its protectors. It just sort of hangs out and survives. Big Mama and the minions do what they do not out of loyalty, but out of instinct. Same as wasps and ants and politicians. Get rid of it, we get rid of them.
Still all guesswork.
You're mad you didn't come up with it.
Got a better idea, Colonel?
Actually, no. But even if you're right, so what? It's there, we're here, and how do we know it's the only one in that dimension?
It's the only one we know of, so it's the only place we have to start with. one swift blow and we could stop this thing. If there are others, then we have to deal with them later. But I think it's reasonably safe to say that the big black pulsing nest is the source of our problem. And it's the weak link. If we are mistaken, well, we have to come up with a plan B. And you may be in the market for two more operatives.
Two more operatives?
Yeah, we got a plan.
This is what Jenny and Elvis were thinking. And it sounded like a plan, all right. But I don't know that it sounded like a plan that would work. But after considering on it, it was like in those old science fiction movies where they decide they're going to kill some monster or such, and a scientist or someone in the know comes up with an idea so wacky that someone says, "It's crazy, but it just might work."
What we need, or rather, what I want, is a big pink Cadillac convertible.
What the fuck? You're expecting presents?
I'm gonna do this. I want to drive to that dark hell in style.
Drive?
That's when Elvis and Jenny explained it. I'm going to nutshell it for you, just like I understand it all. Thing was, Elvis talked about the big black jet of stone and how he had glimpsed it seeming to grow right up out of the safe house's yard. He was talking about when he was on the Rococo Blue and the mind bump from Blind Man. That spot was going to be the entry point. Elvis and Jenny, because they decided it had to be the two of them, because any more than the two of them was unnecessary, and if they failed, and there seemed a large-ass chance they would, there would be defenders left. They were going to load a Cadillac with enough explosives to blow the butt end out of a pachyderm and then some. They were going to jump that bomb-loaded caddy straight into that nest, pulling a plug, firing a wick, whatever worked, let it rocket into that thing, and with a little luck, it would blow it to kingdom come, leaving the worker bees and their leader, Big Mama, high and dry, as far as the nest went. They asked for a certain rig, wanted a special device built, a kind of giant rack put up in the yard. Attached to that rack would be giant straps of elastic, I'm serious, and they would have harnesses on one end of the elastic, and Jenny and Elvis would slip into the harnesses, then they would get into the convertible. The straps would stretch back across the back of the open-roofed Cadillac, all the way to the supports, and the elastic would draw taut. When they felt the car was aimed, they would pop a lever that would cause the seat harnesses to come loose and snap them back from that world, return them to this one. That's, of course, if the portal stayed open. Oh yeah, and there was the ramp. A big wooden ramp that pointed up at the sky and went nowhere at the end. Way Elvis and Jenny saw it was they took the drug, it would jump them and the car into the other dimension, and then they would only need a few seconds to do what they needed to do before being snapped back over the ramp and into a stack of thick mats lying out in the yard in front of the rack. The problem, of course, was they might hit the rack, but mats would be pushed up against it too, so maybe they wouldn't hit it hard. Shit. What could go wrong with a plan like that?
The night before the carpenter and all the materials were to arrive, Elvis sat out on the veranda and looked across the vast yard toward the Mississippi, smoking a cigar. Colonel came out and sat down beside him.
It's all set in motion.
Good. I'm ready. And I think Jenny is too.
Maybe I can make you even more prepared.
The Colonel reached inside his coat and pulled out a small purple bag with a drawstring at the top.
Know what this is?
Elvis removed the cigar from his mouth.
I think I do.
Colonel held the bag in front of him.
Tiebiru, Dicista, Prigiuni, Terrestria, Gladyslav Wesley.
And the Colonel opened the bag with a swift jerk of the drawstring. The air turned warm as toast. And then there was a feeling of contentment that swelled from Elvis, from head to toe. He could smell his mother's scent, and he could feel that sensation she always gave him of total acceptance and absolute confidence. And then there was a twist of blue mist. The mist spun around him and rose up and drifted under the overhang of the veranda, then slipped slowly out of sight. Elvis stood up, leaned out over the veranda rail, and looked up. The mist spread and faded. As it rose starward, Elvis felt a tear run down his cheek and gather in a ball on his lip, and then it rolled over his lips and down his chin.
Heaven Almighty, that was Mama.
It was. She's free now.
Thank you.
It was long overdue. You should be beating my ass for holding that over you. It seemed like the right choice at the time. Now I'm not so sure.
Way I feel, I'm completely grateful and forgiven. Another time I might want to beat your ass, but right now I feel great satisfaction and joy.
I didn't want you going into tomorrow not knowing her fate. She's free, and so are you, to make your own choices. Again, I'm sorry, Elvis.
It's done, Colonel. I feel satisfied.
Good. That's all that matters.
Johnny's Journal.
The car arrived. It was so fine, so very pink and shiny as a wet dime. A 57 with the cool fins. Elvis patted it on the hood as if it were a pony. The ramp didn't take long to build. Colonel had carpenters brought in, and they put that damn thing up pronto mucho fucking quick. Then the big frame went up to which the elastic straps were attached. Those were long straps, and they could be adjusted to coil tight at the harness, and then a ripcord could be pulled and bam, they would tighten again, and if all worked out, the straps would snap our pair back. Of course, it could just snap them into the ramp or pull them through the back of the caddy, but as John Henry said,
"You can't have everything."
The mats were brought in as well. Slide rule fuckers were used, eggheads. They measured this, they measured that, and they pretty much decided it would work, but as one of them said to Elvis,
"I'm glad it's you, not me."
That isn't the sort of endorsement that makes a fella feel enthused. The time came. Elvis and Jenny went out in the yard and I helped them get fastened into their harnesses, which were made of leather and canvas. I fastened the thick elastic straps to them with metal clamps. The straps went back to huge spools bolted to a heavy iron frame weighted down with a bunch of sandbags. Next, the trunk of the convertible in the back seat were packed with explosives. It was done carefully and slowly, and the men and women who did it popped sweat on their foreheads and trembled ever so slightly.
What if it goes off now, Colonel?
The good news is there's enough explosive there you won't feel it. And what's left of us all will be found on the far side of the Mississippi.
Oh, now I feel better.
Elvis and Jenny climbed in the convertible while those helpers Colonel had brought in made sure the elastic didn't tangle. Whole setup looked like some kind of cartoon about to go wrong. You know, the coyote goes off the cliff and there's a puff of smoke and the roadrunner says,
"Meep, meep."
Blind man made his way to the car, tapping the ground with his cane. But hell, we all knew he could sense where they were. He had with him two fat blue pills. John Henry came over with a water bottle, gave that to them. The colonel wandered over.
"All right. Take the pills and wait. You pull those ripcords to come back. The snapping free of the harnesses from the seats, one or both, activates the explosives. You have about 3 seconds, if that long, before it all blows."
"Gotcha."
Elvis took his pill, then a fat slug of water. He passed the water bottle to Jenny, and she followed suit. Colonel looked at his watch.
"All right, everyone stand back. What's near them goes with them."
I found myself hustling pretty quick, over to the front door of the house. I stood under the scorched door sill. My thought about it, decided it wasn't so crazy it just might work. It was in fact so crazy it was not going to work. But it was done by then. All I could do was watch and wait. Figure it was the last time I would ever see either of them. The air shimmered near the car, and then the car and Jenny and Elvis shimmered, as if I were seeing them through a heat wave, or maybe more like they were a mirage. And then Elvis turned on the car's lights, because it's dark over there, started the car, jerked the gear into position as he popped the clutch and hit the gas. And let me tell you, that pink Cadillac was out of there. I mean that, literally. It leapt forward onto that ramp, started up, and then I saw a great hole open in front of the ramp, and then the whole ramp was gone, and there was this strange gap, and the Caddy went up and over the lip of that ramp, and then, nothing. The Caddy was gone. It may have been them taking the drug, but we saw what it did. We saw them go away and pop from view. The ramp was there, and the reels that the elastic was on whistled and whined and grew taut. But the straps just went into a spot in the air and stayed there, stretched.
Good luck, you crazy fools!
The drug made Elvis feel as if his head was swelling like a helium balloon. When he saw the gap open around them, the ramp temporarily poking into that dark dimension, he put the pedal to the metal, and away they flew.
Go, Elvis, go!
And then Jenny's voice died out, and the end of the ramp was clearly in sight. And then the ramp wasn't a ramp. It was that black cliff of slick stone, and around the cliff was more blackness. They could hear the pounding of the dark surf in the distance. The air was thin and hard to breathe. The car slipped and slid a little, but it managed to keep on track. And as they neared the narrow tip of the cliff they saw in the headlights, the huge, dark, writhing thing, the nest. Red dots like fire moved inside of the nest, pulsed and shined out of it in spots. Elvis and Jenny saw the nest was actually alive. Two of the largest red dots were eyes, and they blinked. And a greasy red tongue about the size of the San Francisco Bridge lapped out of a gap and whipped through the air, then withdrew back into blackness. Above the rock wall to which the living nest was fastened, Big Mama and a row of large white grubs could be seen. The cosmic vampires in another form had come home to visit. Their heads were bent down and jammed into the top of the nest. Their bodies vibrated as the nest sucked them dry. More interesting was this. The end of that cliff was coming up fast.
Wee-ah!
Elvis kept his foot to the floorboard.
Yeah!
Elvis would remember it as if it all happened in slow motion. And who knows? Maybe over in that dimension, it did happen in slow motion. The Cadillac shot off the cliff and sailed toward the nest. And in the last moments before the car was to hit, they saw this in the headlights. Big Mama lifted her head out of the nest like an actor poking their noggin through a split in theater curtains. She looked up with a face that was wide and white, but somehow human. And then the car dipped slightly, all 5,000 pounds of it still on target for the center of the nest.
No!
Elvis pulled his ripcord, or rather, that which would pull the elastic bands taut, and Jenny did the same. The car sailed out from under them, the elastic popped them free, and the Caddy sailed out from under them. What Elvis hadn't expected was the pain. Severe pain in his back and shoulders. And even in his pain, he saw the Cadillac flying toward the nest like a rocket. The explosion happening on contact. And what an explosion. The air in front of them turned to hot flame. And in the light from the flame, Elvis could see flying fragments of steel and glass, chunks of nest, meat, or whatever. And then all those fragments spread out in all directions, black and red and white and hot pink. And then everything fell out of sight into the black abyss. And the cloth roof that could be fit over the caddy fluttered by them like a giant bat. A piece of glass hit Elvis in the hip.
Ah!
And then the darkness that had consumed them was light again. Like someone flipped a switch. They were snapped back over the ramp, coming short of the mats, striking the bottom of the ramp on their asses. And then sliding unceremoniously onto the mats that lay on the ground, and finished up by slamming against the mats, leaning against the rack. Elvis turned his head. To his right was Jenny. She was unconscious, and he wasn't sure she was breathing. Johnny's journal, and it all wraps up.
So now you know who the one was. The thing that was inside the nest, or was the nest. Had to sort that out altogether. In the aftermath, even in our dimension, the air smelled like burnt toast and a boiled egg fart. There were fragments of Cadillac and pieces of this and that, white goo, black goo, and rock fragments scattered on the ramp. Elvis and Jenny appeared to be intact, but Jenny wasn't moving. Elvis was writhing his way out of the harness.
Get this bastard thing off me!
By the time I got to them, Elvis was bent over Jenny, giving her mouth-to-mouth resuscitation. Her hands came up and pushed at his chest.
That's the only way he'll taste my lips.
Tears ran down Elvis's cheeks. He grabbed her and pulled her to him.
Ouch! Broken up here. Take it easy.
Well, that was pretty much it. We hung around for about a week there. Elvis and Jenny got some medical attention, but neither were badly injured. And we kept our feelers out for a resurgence of weird-as-shit activity, but there was none. They were either wiped out or taken one hell of a rest. Blind Man took a bit of Rococo Blue and sent out his mental feelers.
The dimension is empty of life.
We decided to believe him. Later, outside, I sniffed. The smell from the explosion that had been partly in both worlds was gone. The air was crisp and stank only of the Mississippi. Elvis and House Ghost rode the Light Fantastic upstairs during the couple of weeks where he recovered from his hip wound. From all that went on upstairs, I determined, wound or no wound, he was fine. I noticed Jenny seemed a little jealous, but she didn't say anything. Frankly, it was all a little embarrassing hearing Elvis and House Ghost go at it. But hey, it was also a little stimulating. I had a few nights with Mrs. Palm and her five daughters. We had a wake for Jack. Everyone cried, even Colonel. I will tell you this, once we left there, took the paddle wheel back to the dock where me and Elvis first joined the crew. When I drove the car up out of the innards of the great paddle wheel, Elvis was not only in the back seat, so was Jenny. House Ghost or no House Ghost, they had a connection. When I got them back to Memphis, Elvis didn't stay at Graceland longer than a second, and then he and Jenny were out of there, riding in a powder blue Cadillac convertible. This time they wouldn't be driving into hell. Where they went and what they did, I have no idea. But when Elvis came back a month or so later, she wasn't with him. About a month later, I started seeing Jenny on TV singing, and I never worked with her again. I heard she had quit the monster killing business. She had a few hits, and then she was gone. And in my view, so was Elvis. Oh, there was a guy that looked a lot like him, not quite as tall, but it wasn't him, I will bet you that. He was the guy who came back in the powder blue Cadillac. There was never a moment when that Elvis seemed to know about monster hunting or anything that had gone before. He was well versed in all things Elvis, but I tell you, it wasn't the same guy. A month would have been just the right time to get him all trained up in what he needed to know, especially if he was already an imitator, looked like him, knew the songs, and could sing them. But I told you my suspicions early on. The real Elvis is out there. Somewhere.
Later, the Colonel and Elvis at a motel in Houston, Texas.
So I won't lose all my memory?
No. Just the parts that have to do with the monsters. You'll remember me, your career as a singer, your life as others know it. You won't know about your mother's spirit having been in that bag, or about me setting it free. You won't remember meeting Jenny. But that's all right. After last night, she won't remember you either. She made the same choice, Elvis. I didn't like it at first, but truth is, this game is getting old, and so am I. And old to me is a far more relative term than you might expect.
After this, in other words, you'll just be the same old asshole I've always known?
Exactly. Sebastian Half. He's the best of the impersonators. You picked wisely. We can maybe do a contract or something, should you want to come back and be you, the musical you. The monster killer you, that's done, now and forever. But the musical you, we could have a contract. You're sure that's what you want?
It is.
Now, take this pill. It's not Rococo Blue, but it helps me set the tone. It's a powerful drug, but in a different way. Its effects pass quickly, but it's not the sort of thing you would want to make a habit of taking. It'll just be this once, this pill. There you go. Now, close your eyes, and when you open them, look at what's right in front of you. A shiny pocket watch, and watch it swing, and listen to the sound of my voice. I'll walk you out of the Boo Buddy world, as Johnny calls them, and into a new one, where you're you, pretending to be someone else who is pretending to be you. Pay attention now. Watch the watch.
In a powder blue Cadillac, rolling down Highway 80, a man who looked a lot like Elvis Presley, but claimed to be an Elvis impersonator named Sebastian Half, drove fast. He was driving away from two pasts, one he remembered and one he did not.
We call this the end, baby.
Bubba and the Cosmic Bloodsuckers by Joe R. Lansdale is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2017 by Joe R. Lansdale. Published by arrangement with the author. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2025 Graphic Audio LLC. All rights reserved. Unauthorized download and/or duplication is prohibited. Narrated by Scott McCormick and Danny Gaffigan as Jimmy. Featuring Rob McFadgen as Elvis Presley, Terrence Aselfort as the Colonel, Amanda Forstrom as Jenny, Ken Jackson as John Henry, Thomas Penny as the Blind Man, Ryan Delasung as Jack, and Richard Rowan as President Dick Nixon. With additional performances by Karen Novak, Jonathan Church, Drew Kopis, Yasmin Toison, Donald Guzzi, Kaya Freitz, and Andrew Arceus. Directed and adapted for Graphic Audio by Scott McCormick. Dialogue editing and Graphic Audio sound design by Maddie Famartino. Theme music by Maddie Frank. Original music by Maddie Frank. Produced by Colleen Delaney, Scott McCormick, David Zitney, Casey Green, and Aaron Coe. Executive producers, Angie Cornett, Dwayne Beeman, and Matt Webb. Did you miss the final chapter in the Great Elvis Adventure? Experience the story that was adapted into the cult movie classic Bubba Hotep by Joe R. Lansdale. After swapping lives with Elvis impersonator Sebastian Half, Elvis is spending his golden years at the Mud Creek Shady Grove Convalescence Home alongside a man claiming to be President John F. Kennedy. Strange sights and sounds lead the two to discover an ancient Egyptian mummy stalking the corridors of their retirement home. They soon face off against the monster, but will anyone believe their story or shrug it off as more tall tales? If you want more horror-filled full-cast audio, keep listening for a sample of Bubba Hotep by Joe R. Lansdale. Available now in graphic audio. Always taking care of business in a flash.
Oh, you're Ken?
My daddy.
I haven't seen you here before.
Only been here once before, when I checked him in.
Oh, that was 3 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah. Were you and him friends?
Elvis considered the question. He didn't know the real answer. All he knew was Bull listened to him when he said he was Elvis Presley and seemed to believe him. If he didn't believe him, he at least had the courtesy not to patronize. Bull always called him Elvis, and before Bull grew too ill, he always played cards and checkers with him.
They're just roommates. He didn't feel good enough to say much. Just sort of hated to see what was left of him go away so easy. Oh, he's an all right guy. He mentioned you a lot. You're Callie, right?
Yeah. Well, he was all right.
Not enough you came and saw him, though.
Don't try to put some guilt trip on me, mister. I did what I could. Hadn't been for Medicaid, Medicare, whatever that stuff was, he'd have been in a ditch somewhere. I didn't have the money to take care of him.
Elvis thought of his own daughter, lost long ago to him. If she knew he lived, would she come to see him? Would she care? He feared knowing the answer.
You could have come and seen him.
I was busy. Mind your own business, here?
The chocolate-skinned nurse with the grapefruit tits came in. Her white uniform crackled like cards being shuffled. Her little white nurse hat was tilted on her head in a way that said she loved mankind and made good money and was getting regular dick. She smiled at Callie and then at Elvis.
How are you this morning, Mr. Huff?
All right, but I prefer Mr. Presley or Elvis. I keep telling you that. I don't go by Sebastian Half anymore. I don't try to hide anymore.
Why, of course. I knew that. I forgot. Good morning, Elvis.
Her voice dripped with sorghum syrup. Elvis wanted to hit her with his bedpan.
Did you know we have a celebrity here, Miss Thomas? Elvis Presley. You know, the rock and roll singer?
I've heard of him. I thought he was dead.
Callie went back to the dresser and squatted and set to work on the bottom drawer. The nurse looked at Elvis and smiled again. Only she spoke to Callie.
Well, actually, Elvis is dead. And Mr. Half knows that. Don't you, Mr. Half?
Hell no. I'm right here. I ain't dead yet.
Thanks for listening to this graphic audio production. Graphic Audio has over 1,700 titles to choose from. Listen to over 225 binge-worthy series. We feature titles in genres like science fiction, fantasy, romanticy, westerns, mystery thrillers, comics, and more. Check out our exclusive series such as Deathlands, Rogue Angel, Outlanders, Tangent Knights, and Agent of Exiles, which are only available in our dramatized adaptation format. Experience a radically different type of audiobook produced with a full cast, sound effects, and cinematic music. Listen to a movie in your mind, on the go, anytime, anywhere. Our dramatized adaptation titles are available at all major audiobook retailers and platforms. Sign up for our email newsletter for the latest updates and new releases. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and other social platforms. For more information and samples of all our titles, visit our website at graphicaudio.net.